I'm Jesse Woolley Wilson. I'm president of K-12 at Blackboard. I want to welcome you here this morning. We want to thank you for joining us for this morning's dialogue. We want to, on behalf of Project Tomorrow, I want to welcome you today. We're going to discuss the trends, updates for report learning in the 21st century, which you might have received from us last year. It's a national report on online learning. At Blackboard, we're committed to helping districts and really partnering with you to improve your capabilities and ensure that all students have an excellent education, including access to high-quality courses and teachers. But we want to make sure that they're highly effective as well. We believe students today both need and want more personalized and more engaging, connected learning experiences. And at Blackboard, we work very hard to accomplish this. It's something that we call powered learning. So with this, we're excited to share the results about our teachers, students, parents, and for the first time ever, school leaders across the country have to say about online learning. We believe the new trends reinforce the need to close the gap between the way students are living every day and the way they're learning. And we think that this is our shared mission with you. So I'd like to, at this point, introduce Julie Evans, president of Project Tomorrow, to share the results of this important survey and engage in a conversation with you and with some distinguished panelists that we've selected today. So enjoy your breakfast. I know this is an early call, but this is exciting. This is an exciting report. And we'll be going to find it very interesting. So, Julie?
Thank you very much, Jesse. And good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's so nice to have you all here. As Jesse said, nice early call. But once again, Blackboard has put on a wonderful breakfast for you. We're going to make this more of a conversation this morning. We are going to give you an update on the trends report. And then we do have an esteemed panel of experts. But we do want to make it conversational. So as we're going through, if you have questions, feel free to stop me or during our panel. We'll stop the panel and move on. To get started, I first want to, of course, thank Blackboard, both for the wonderful breakfast that we have here this morning, as well as for their support in terms of getting this type of information out to all of you, out to the policymakers, out to the think leaders, thought leaders, and the people that are really influencing K-12 education. I tremendously value the relationship that we have with Blackboard, and thank everyone from Blackboard who's here supporting students. What we're going to do today is review the new data findings that we have, and you each received a copy of the updated report. That will also be available and can be downloaded from Blackboard. We'll give you some instructions on that as we go through. Hopefully gain some new insights today on online learning that you can take back to your schools and districts and think about anew, stimulate some new conversations. And then we also have, as I said, this wonderful panel that's going to share some information with us. On the panel with us today is Janet Herdman, who's from Kansas City, Melissa Higgs-Horwell, who's from Ohio, and Ann McMullen, who is here from Texas. So some different perspectives on what they're doing with online learning, and we'll get some insights from them as we go through. Just in case you are not familiar with Speak Up, let me give you sort of the 1, 2, 3 on the Speak Up project. It is an annual research project. We've been doing this since fall of 2003. We started this project because we wanted to hear from students directly. We wanted to get an authentic set of viewpoints from students, what they thought about 21st century education, particularly in the use of technology. We subsequently expanded the project to include teachers, parents, and as Jesse so nicely said, for the first time last fall, we also polled school leaders. Since fall of 2003, we've had 1.2 million surveys submitted to us from about 14,000 schools, all 50 states. Last year, when the survey was conducted in the fall, and it is done 100% online, and then we backed that up with focus groups, we had about 367,000 surveys submitted to us. We've also given you some information on the table about Speak Up, and we'll go through that with you at the end as well. The questions that we asked on the Speak Up survey range from your basic technology, what are kids doing in terms of using technology in school and out of school. We ask that also for parents, the teachers, and the school leaders. But we also get into a little bit meatier topic, shall we say, where we ask about 21st century skills. We asked a series of questions last year about science instruction and global competitiveness, and then also a theme around emerging technologies. And so we polled all of those different education stakeholders on on mobile devices, gaming, and once again on online learning. We've actually been collecting data on online learning to get those authentic viewpoints from these stakeholders for several years. And then every year we ask students, teachers, parents, and once again this year, school leaders for the first time. So if you were in charge of designing that ultimate 21st century school for learners just like you, what would that school look like? And I'm going to share some of that with you here this morning. We did release last October at the National School Boards Association, Q Plus L Conference, and Ann Flynn is here with us today, the original report, Learning in the 21st Century. For that report, we took our 2006 speak-up data and also interviewed a number of school districts to get their perspectives. That report is downloadable from Blackboard. And when we started looking at our 2007 data, we saw some really significant new findings. And that's when, in collaboration with Blackboard, we said, we've just got to put out another supplement. We have to do an update to the report. So thank you all for joining us for that. The big questions were really around the views and aspirations of students, teachers, parents, and school leaders. But more importantly, what's changed? Is there been any movement? Is there greater acceptance of online learning? Are there some different parameters that we hadn't thought about before? And what can we learn from a variety of different online learning implementations? So I'm going to go through a series looking at students, teachers, and school leaders, give you a couple findings, and as I said, what I really want to do then is pull up our panel, because they're the real experts. We're going to poll them on what they're doing in their individual districts. So the first finding we have today is that, in fact, and it won't come necessarily as a surprise to you, but today students are very interested in online learning opportunities. In fact, we asked students, what sort of familiarity do you have right now with online learning? And are you interested in taking an online learning class? One of the things that we did in 2007 last fall was that we went all the way down and polled third, fourth, and fifth graders in addition to middle school and high school kids. And what we learned was about 36% of high school kids, for example, have had some experience with online learning. It might be through their school, it might be incorporated in a blended environment in their classroom, or they may have sought out a class outside of school, totally on their own, which we thought was really interesting. The other thing that we thought was very interesting is look at the red bars all the way across. That's the students that have not had familiarity with an online class or any sort of online learning, but they're interested in taking one. Even all the way down to our third, fourth, and fifth graders, almost 20% of them said they were interested in taking an online class. We asked students again this year, why do you want to take an online class? What's the interest there? Last year in the initial report, we found out something very interesting about middle school students. It was verified again in our 2007 data. If you look at the, aren't the colors pretty? The orange is our high school, the light blue is middle school, and the green is our elementary students this time. So as you can see the orange bars, the high school kids, as many of us probably already expect, are taking it for the college credit, taking it for a class that they can't get possibly at their school right now. But look at our middle school students. That's our blue line. The number one reason a middle school student says they'd like to take an online class is to get extra help in a subject where they're struggling. They want to take it in addition to, not to supplement. So they're looking for that extra help when they get home, if they're struggling with a particular topic. When we ask the kids, well, what is that topic? What is that subject area that you want to take that online class in? Anybody want to take a guess? It's always math. Always math. We also thought it was interesting, just before I get off of the slide, for the younger kids, and once again, this is the first time we were polling these young kids, they're also interested in working at their own pace to get some extra help and to just basically learn about additional subjects. Let me share a couple things with you that we learned from teachers. Teachers are also interested in online learning in the two ways that you would expect. One, in their classroom to work with their students, but also for their own professional development. What we found is that in the classroom use, about 11% have used some sort of learning management system in their class. A third have explored on their own, not with district direction, explored on their own how they can incorporate online learning into their daily instruction. And 31% are interested in learning more. We thought those were really strong statements about the acceptance of online learning into the classroom. On the professional development side, we were really impressed with these numbers. About 21% of the teachers in our poll, and just to give you a framework, we had about 25,000 teachers take the survey last year, but 21% said they have used some sort of online learning methodology for a professional development class, about 16% for their own career advancement outside of something that was directed through their district, and 12% have taken it for personal enrichment, so taking some sort of interesting class on their own. We thought that also was a really strong statement. And when we ask them, well, what is your preferred methodology for professional development, about a quarter of the teachers told us it's now online learning. That was a huge increase over our 2006 numbers, so we thought that was very significant. We asked teachers also, so what do you see as the benefits of online learning professional development? Won't come as any surprise to any of you here. Fits into my schedule. It's the convenience component. But look at some of the other ones that were equally strong. Over 40% said, I like that idea of self-directed learning. We've been talking about self-directed learning, not only with our students, but with our teachers, and it's coming out in our data here. Saves time. And then also look at just in terms of the learning style, really looking at that personalization of online learning to not only what the students need, but to what the teachers need themselves. This was the first time that we polled school leaders. I'm going to share with you a couple tidbits from our school leader data, but I'll also give you a little bit of a sneak peek. In October at NSBA T+L, again, we'll be releasing a new report that we are once again doing wonderfully in collaboration with Blackboard, where we're looking very deeply at the school leader data. So you can kind of keep a little thing in the back of your mind about a new report in October that we'll be releasing on school leaders. Schools and districts are implementing all kinds of online learning. And that was one of the big findings that we started really sort of scratching at last year, was that there was not one size fits all. There was not one formula that works for everybody. Everybody seems to have their own sort of customized approach to this. So we wanted to poll school leaders and see a little bit what they were doing. And so you can see a little bit of this. And it's all over the board. Instructor-led online course on campus, about 23%. Instructor-led online course totally virtual, 20%. Self-paced student-directed, a little bit over a quarter of the school leaders told us they have that implemented. And then blended, about 20%. So no really strong way one way or the other, but really a nice collection of a variety of different implementations. We asked the administrator, so what would be the reason that you would pursue online learning? And they said number one reason was student engagement. 45% of our school leaders, which included both principals as well as district administrators, so that would be a reason for them either to start an online learning environment or to expand it. But look at some of the other responses, which I thought were also equally strong. Scheduling alternatives we would think of, personalized instruction, teacher interest in teaching an online class. So if the teacher came to the administrator and said, I want to do this, a third of those administrators said that would be a very strong, influential factor for them in evaluating that. And then student requests. Since from a speak up standpoint, we are so passionate about encouraging student voice and listening to student voice, we were thrilled to hear that school leaders were accepting that as well. They also, as you might imagine, face some very similar barriers, shall we say, to the implementation, similar to what we see in some other emerging technologies. So it won't come as any surprise to any of you here. Almost two-thirds say funding is that, or a little bit over two-thirds, say funding is that number one. But let's look underneath the hood here a little bit. Some of the other barriers, that need for professional development. So a very concentrated effort that says we're not just going to put something out there. We're really going to be thinking about what sort of professional development does our staff need to fully incorporate online learning. A concern about digital equity. If we go to an online learning environment, do some students have better access than others? The integrations of the curriculum and then competing priorities, which is similar to what we see with some of the other emerging technologies we've polled on. And it's increasingly becoming a component in that 21st century school. As I said, we love to ask the question of the students, the teachers, the parents, this kind of school leader. So if you were designing that ultimate school, where does online learning fit into that? And so we did ask and pulled for you the students and teacher data. And so overwhelmingly from the students, and it has been the same answer that we've gotten from students for several years, they want their own laptop they can use in school and take home. That has been the number one response. But we've seen some nice movement, actually about 24% increase in online classes as being part of that ultimate school for the students. Now you see the orange line is the students, a little bit stronger for the students, but also starting to see some nice movement over 20%, about 23% actually, of the teachers said that that is a key component of that 21st century school today. So what do we see overall as those key benefits for online learning coming from our data, listening to students, listening to teachers, listening to parents and school leaders? Really an opportunity for the expansion of learning opportunities through online learning. A great strong sense of personalization of learning. And we saw that for the first time here with the teachers in terms of the reasons that they'd be interested in online learning. And then this component of engagement. We hear that from the students, we hear it from the teachers, we also hear it from the school leaders. The report, the new report, the updated trends report is downloadable from Blackboard. We also have a wonderful blog on our website, tomorrow.org, our speak-up blog. We'd love to have you participate with us in some of these conversations. Continue this because we all learn from you. And also, if you're interested in more of our speak-up data, I gave you just a thumbnail sketch of what we collected from 2007 last year. We do have some national findings on our website, some additional reports on our website. And then also, we put on your table, we're actually getting ready right now for, or starting to get ready, for Speak Up 2008. We'll be opening up the online surveys in fall, probably around middle of October, and run it for about 6 weeks. Speak Up, if you have not participated in the past, is open to every school and district in the country, and you get back your own aggregated data from your students, your teachers, your parents, and your school leaders, in addition to the national benchmarks. And schools and districts all across the country use this to inform their budgets, their plans, their professional development opportunities, and their community engagement because they share the information with their parents. We put on the table, because we are in this mode of getting ready for Speak Up, if you have some question ideas, you should ask this question on Speak Up. This is what we want to find out. Please feel free to go ahead and write that down and give that to one of my staff people. It's really from you that we get the key questions that you're interested in, and we'd love to have that opportunity. Okay, what I'd like to do now is call up our esteemed panel of experts. I know Anne's in the back. Janet and Melissa are right here. Please come up. And we're going to have a little conversation with them. I'm going to ask them a few leading questions, shall we say. And then I want to open it up to all of you. And you can pull them on what some of your ideas are as well. And that's where we'll get into the interactive conversation. Great. I think I'm gonna stand more like over this way. Okay, and as I said before, we have Janet Gergen is here from Kansas City. Melissa Higgs-Horwell is here from, and I always get this wrong, South Central Ohio Computer Association. And Andy Cohen is here from Klein ISD, which is just outside of Houston. So what I'd like to have you do, ladies, and thank you so much for joining us here for the breakfast, is just one by one go through and give us an idea of what does online learning look like in your district or in the association in terms of Melissa, in terms of the school districts that you're supporting. So for each one of you, just give us, you know, what does online learning look like in your district? What have you done? Or how is your implementation?
Hi. North Kansas City is a suburban urban school district in the Kansas City metropolitan area, about 18,000 students. We are approaching our fifth year of online learning. We started looking at the initiative of, you know, what did we want to do with kids to extend learning opportunities in 2003, purchased Blackboard in 2004. So we've used the system for a little while. And our primary goal in using this was, again, to extend learning opportunities for kids, and we thought in the high school situation. So we wanted both blended and online courses. I'm very happy to say that that's been a very successful initiative for us. We have now 500 students that took an online class this last summer, and that's up from about 400 kids from last summer. So this last year, it's just fully blossomed and grown. We attribute a lot of that to our online coordinators with us this morning, also Marla Walker. And I think that that's contributed. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit about successes later and things that contribute to that. But I think having someone responsible for that has helped us quite a bit. One of the side benefits for us for having an online program has been the professional development. The teacher professional development, the collaboration that happens. Not only are we offering the classes for teachers to take, but we're also using it for our curriculum collaboration tool. So we have vertical dialogue that's going on between middle school and high school teachers about science, because we've got them in groups by cadres. So of the two benefits that we thought we would have with the blended and the online, the professional development component's been really nice for us, side benefit too.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks. We'll be back to you, so hold on. Go ahead, Melissa, you're up.
I'm not in an ESC. I'm at, in Ohio, there are 17 ITCs that are work with all kinds of technology and provide it to the school systems, the fiscal, the student services, internet, library automation. So I'm at one of those facilities, and our Blackboard portal has 32 districts, and they're almost all very small Appalachian school districts, very, very poor. Some of them are so rural you can't get cell phone within 40 minutes. So in the hills of southern Ohio. And we have there are some broadband initiatives that are some statewide and national initiatives that they're trying to bring in, but that's a real factor. However, all of our schools now have fiber, so we're doing well in that area. We had several Blackboard servers in different counties that we consolidated in the portal, and they were purchased because of a grant, a distance learning grant. And I think they mostly thought that they would support video conference classes, which really didn't happen. The Blackboard grew on its own. And now that we put these three consortia together into one, we have some real strong teacher use. It's blended is what we mostly do. But now some of our superintendents are looking and just started some credit recovery courses. We also have one district out of our area that's part of a video conference consortia, which is Beechwood City Schools, a suburb of Cleveland, which always just sort of sticks out, like, why are they with you? But they're part of a video consortia. So they work very closely with us. And in southern Ohio, because we're so spread out and so poor, we rely on collaborations of all different agencies. And that's what's made us strong. And PD has grown with our Blackboard, and we can, Ohio University, we have a good arrangements with them that they will offer, let us offer any PD for credit, and they have a very reasonable fee, so that has helped that grow. And also, as we offer those, there are a lot of school improvement initiatives that are using Blackboard for their collaborative work. There's a lot of literacy councils and literacy consultants that are using those together and individually in their own district. So we've got a lot of school improvement stuff that's just Blackboard is perfect for them, and they're looking at offering classes as well. But mostly it's blended teachers offering additional resources, places for student portfolios, and it's just each district is very different in how they approach it.
That's what we see. Okay, Ann.
Good morning. And as the native Texan here, welcome to Texas and welcome to San Antonio, and I hope you're enjoying your time here. It's a beautiful city, actually my hometown, born and raised here, but have lived in the Houston area for the last 30 years, so have a wonderful time here. The Klein School District is located about 25 miles north of downtown Houston. We are a rapid growth district, growing at about 2,000 students a year, and we're at 44,000 when I left 2 days ago. We'll see when we get back, but wow. High growth. And actually, that is one of the reasons. Not only are we rapid growth, but our demographics are changing. We're historically a suburban school district with a little bit of rural, and our rural is the part that's growing so fast now, but we're becoming more urban in some of the challenges that we are facing. And we really got into the online learning arena from two different ways. In K-8 here in Texas, for our technology applications curriculum, there was an adoption process through the normal textbook adoption process, except that the proviso was that what we got had to be available online, that we were not purchasing textbooks for technology applications. So that was really probably the first big launch in our district, and that was K-8. And so we purchased an online product for our students in K-8 to complete the required curriculum for the state curriculum for technology applications, as well as for our high school courses. 2 years ago, we launched a pilot program for online learning for high school students to recover credit. And it was wildly successful. We had students recover over 800 credits in that first year. And so this past year, it was expanded to all four of our high schools and has been equally successful. And Julie, I was struck by one of the comments you talked about, one of the barriers being funding, and that certainly is a barrier. But one of the reasons for our launch for online learning for credit recovery was as an alternative to summer school. And quite honestly, when we look at what happened to gas prices in the last 2 months, having an alternative to having to bus children to summer school because they had already recovered the credit during the year has proven to be a financially wise decision and one that we're going to continue to look at. So that is an area that has really been successful for us. And because of that success with credit recovery, we are going to expand this year. The credit recovery courses were done on site with a teacher in a lab with the students, but we're going to start offering some SAT and ACT prep courses online off-site for students to take on their own, and we're also expanding it in some other ways. And then we are launching in Texas this year the Texas Virtual School Network, and I'll be happy to talk about that a little bit more later.
Great. Okay, so we have a pretty good foundation of where everybody's coming from there, some sort of different implementations. And sort of started my next question, which was there anything that came out of this new trends report that surprised you or reaffirmed what your understanding was, either on both sides? Anything in particular?
I think, particularly from students, you know, I think 5 years ago when we talked about online learning, what you heard a lot was, well, it's not for every kid and not everybody can do it. And what I'm seeing in your report is that that's shifting a little bit. And I think that as students work more and more in an online world 24/7 all the time, I think the notion that perhaps they can't do online courses may be changing. I was also struck by your ages, because we typically think of high school, but I'm seeing that moving down to the younger areas as well, and certainly we saw that with our K-8 coursework online. So I think those are two that I saw.
Let me just answer something that Ann said, and then I do want to get your point again. Besides doing the surveys, we also did focus groups, and it's really interesting what you said, Ann, because we're actually, when I have a group of high school kids, they're still, I think, mirroring what the adults are saying, which is online learning isn't for everybody. So here with the high school kids, I'm not an online learner. It doesn't fit my style. When I have middle school and elementary kids, they all want to do online learning.
Interesting.
They don't seem to have that sort of mirrored reflection of what the adults around them are saying, which I think is really interesting. So it's almost like percolating up from the younger kids, which was the reason that we went and polled the younger kids.
No, I was just going to say, I think it reaffirmed a lot of what the students were saying. I mean, as far as the flexibility, being able to take, for many of our students, it's the ability to take classes, extra classes. It's the student that is really involved in class that wants to take band as well as all the AP classes. And so now we can take personal finance online in the summer and still be able to fit band into their schedule during the year. So it was reaffirming from that position too. One of the things that we found is that students are getting comments. I know Marla's relayed to me that just in the last week she had a student that left a voicemail, said, "I just didn't know it was going to be this hard because I didn't think it would be this much work in an online class. I thought it would be easier, or the curriculum would be less, have less rigor." And I think so we're starting to get some affirmation for both the students and the teachers that just because it's online doesn't mean it doesn't have the rigor that they do in the regular classroom. And to us, that's good.
I thought the elementary statistics were very interesting, and the huge jump overall in the numbers that want to take that. And we just started some more elementary rollouts in some districts this year. And in districts that are doing that, it is the students that are really so excited and pushing it. So Ohio has a big P16 initiative, and I think all of this report just in our areas, use of Blackboard really fits in.
One final question that I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, so get ready. What lessons or recommendation could you give to someone who is just starting out online learning, or just thinking about it, or just has a little pilot program? Is there something from your experience, I wish we knew this before?
I would say, I think what we did, and I think it was a good model, was we thought big and we started small. We started with 3 classes and 18 kids our first year. And the superintendent allowed it to grow. You know, they said we don't have to make a class of 15. We can make a class of 5 that first year, and we would let those numbers grow. And we have grown literally from 18 kids to 500 in about 3 years. So we think that that was a good step. One of the things that we've talked about that we want to beef up this year, to start with the pedagogy of teaching online. Some of our instructors are great in the classroom, and for us, and they've learned to use Blackboard as a tool, but not necessarily the pedagogy of teaching online. And so that's going to be one of our efforts that we're going to work with this year. Another effort that we're going to work is the instruction with our leaders. We've got a few of our principals and central office staff that have used Blackboard as a tool and used the online learning, but we think that that'll take it to a new level also if our leaders are modeling that. So those are two that we want to focus on for this year.
I think that one of the main problems with our consortium...
I can't hear you in the back. Can you just hold that?
No. I think one of the main problems with our consortium was that it was grant funded. The way it was started, it's just such a large area. And sort of got started by technology coordinators and not curriculum people. And that was just the way the grants started. And I think if it had been more curriculum-led, it would have grown a lot more. But right now, with a lot of state and area initiatives, the curriculum people are getting involved more, and they are really seeing what we have, and they're jumping on so that and pushing it more. So I think it's just all fitting together, and I would have changed it, but we couldn't have. So I think it's just growing exponentially.
I think Janet and Melissa are right on the mark. I really, everything that they said, I would echo the notion of starting small and then growing it. I think we do that. Then the program takes on a life of its own, and you don't have to push it to anybody because they see the success. So the only thing, and I absolutely agree, going through curriculum, everything we do in educational technology has to come, if it's going to be successful, has to come through the voice of the curriculum people, or it's not going to happen. So we have to do that. The only thing I would add is the other group that we probably need to really be sure that we have educated in this process, particularly at the high school level, are the counselors. Because it is through the high school counselors that students in the first place even find out about it, get approval to take it. And sometimes we just have to be sure that we have included them and that they understand the validity of what's happening and so forth so that they're there. But I second everything Janet and Melissa said on that.
To Ann's point again, and Ann, I have to tell you, I don't know if I learned this from you or if I heard this in my walkabouts around the country, but it appears for a lot of online learning, the gatekeeper is the guidance office. Mm-hmm. Because if the student goes in and says, I'm interested in taking such and such a class, I can't fit it in my schedule, why do I have to give up band? Mm-hmm. Unless that guidance counselor is on the page to say, here's some alternatives or here's some ways of approaching it, the student walks out without being fulfilled. It's been interesting. I think I did hear it from you, Ann, but I think I've heard it from other people as well all around the country. One of the things, and we started pulling out of our school leader data, we did have guidance counselors that took it. We're actually going to beef up that and then pull out of abstraction just looking at guidance counselors because it's going to be really interesting. What questions does our audience have? All the way back.
This may be a question more for Ann and Janet, but I'm interested in the degree to which you're
I'll address that.
Okay,
because free fits in our budget just so well. We just more and more every year. We are users of NetTrekker, which we pay for NetTrekker, but that thing gives you online resources through a variety of places. We have a number of one-to-one initiatives going on, so we are using resources to support in the classroom, so teachers use their resources as well. Obviously not for full coursework, but that was not your question, if I understand it. It is just the use of online resources. We are embedding online resources into our curriculum, so our curriculum people actually use NetTrekker and other products to find those resources. We're also getting them now as supplements to textbook adoption, which is a very nice piece. And I would just add, Julie, on that note, you mentioned math as the one that people, mm-hmm. we in Texas have just been through two mathematics adoptions in the last 2 years. A year ago it was secondary and this year elementary. And at least in our district, both of the print books that we adopted came with a fully online version. And of course, as you all know, that online version isn't just a PDF version of the book. It has the interactive tutorials, the video professor there to explain it. That has been wildly successful. That speaks to what you were talking to, Julie, about having somebody at home to help with the work through those resources. So yes, we use free resources wherever we can find them.
We've done a lot with our collaboration. I spoke earlier about we've used Blackboard as a collaboration tool to collect resources. And so part of that dialogue has been to identify this is the curriculum and these are some resources that go with it. And so our teachers have put the best of the best in their cadre group areas. So we are collecting those also and sharing them through that.
And are they involved in creating resources?
They have in some extent. I know Marla's made some efforts this year in trying to. One of the things we've done in our own tech coordinator group, I have a technology coordinator to each of our secondary schools, and we've used our Blackboard site to collect our own training materials. And so for all the things that we train on, we now have sites that we've collected, whether we've made our own podcasts or videos that we've made of online instruction. So that we're using it for our own tutorials and collection, or repository, if you will.
Definitely. One in particular, an organization in Southern Ohio mostly, it's OACHI, it's a Appalachian College Access a program, but it works with quite a few colleges in the Appalachian counties of Ohio. And they have a conference, they have lots of initiatives, and anytime they have an initiative, they pull our Blackboard into it and promote it more and try to pull people together. And anytime they're writing a grant, they say, well, let's use Blackboard with that. Mm-hmm. And they definitely have pushed our use.
We have an interesting, it's a little bit internal, it's not an external piece that we're going to start up this year. We built a brand new high school that opens up this fall. It'll be our fourth. And as part of that, it's a LEED certified, which means it's a green school. And we are starting a whole green initiative across our district. And one of our associate superintendents who's leading that said, can we use Blackboard as our repository again for all of our LEED initiative? So everyone that's got something, they'll contribute it as part of that. So we'll have a whole collection of ideas that we can then share out. So and that'll have some community folks as part of that too.
In terms of the online courses that you're offering, what percent of them are created within your district or service area, and what are being used by the private companies or statewide or regional sort of providers?
Ours are 100%. Well, ours are 100% created in-house at this point. We started with three that we called cartridges. We bought them the first year because we didn't think we had the knowledge base to create our own. And after that first year, we learned that one, the ones we bought didn't match our curriculum as well, and as our teachers became more knowledgeable and confident that they could create their own, ours are 100%.
Do you expect to stay in the creation of courses online?
Ours are 100% created in-house.
Ours are purchased, but one career center in Ohio has created courses based on aligned to Ohio standards, and those have been very successful. We're looking at some others, but as far as those credit recovery courses that we've purchased, our superintendents are finding that they have tried to get students in these other initiatives like this VLA and other online courses for credit recovery that are regional but out of our area, and they're finding how successful our own credit recovery courses are when the teacher is in our area or local. So that is making a big change in the way we do things.
Because we just started this 2 years ago, we did purchase a product, and because it's still done primarily on-site, so the teacher interaction is there, we are on the cusp of moving in the other direction. And we will, the products that we purchased, we tweaked. And so, you know, they're personalized for our district. But we have people in training this year for the NAICL standards for online, and I expect that we will be producing our own within the next 2 years.
Have any of you had homeschooling students take advantage of any of your online courses in the community?
We have. And that first year we did, and that was one of our great successes that we had hoped to tap into. Some homebound students, and we've had some students in some transitional programs with behavioral issues that were removed. We had one of our first successes also included a student had a very hard time interacting with other kids, really did not participate at all. He was in school, but he wasn't participating. His grades were horrible while he was there. Went into the online classes and just started blossoming, and kids were like, wow, I didn't know this child talked. Because he was so, you know, intimidated in front of the class, but in an online environment, he spoke up. So we've had some great successes like that.
It's interesting, when we did the report release at NSBA back last October, our panel included Sean Morris, who's from Wichita, and their e-school in Wichita started out as a K-8 really to address homeschoolers. It's really an interesting story. We have a podcast.
Yes, we do pay stipends. That's part of an economic issue of they are very economical classes for us to teach. We don't have 30 kids sitting in an online class, though, so you know we don't want to take a full FTE for that class. We have, Marla, it's 2,500 or 3,000 that we pay for a stipend for the teachers. No, 1,500. 1,500 a semester. for the year, it's $3,000. For the semester, it's 1,500. For the year, it's 3,000 to teach a class. And so that's an extra load that you would have on top of that. And that's for, I think, about 15 kids. Marla will be able to give you the details of the stipends later. But yes, it is stipend based.
One of our districts is paying a stipend. And we are not using one, though.
And we are not yet, but we will be. As this evolves in our district, we expect to do that, to use a stipend-based system to pay teachers to do that. But right now, it's part of their regular teaching day because it's done on-site.
Okay. Another question? Yes, sir.
What are the threats? You know, these are interesting times for every state economically. And anything new or, you know, is one of those, you know, what are the threats you think you brought up?
Capacity of the system. I mean, really for us, it's keeping up with the licenses and the numbers and getting all the teachers trained. I mean, we have a ton of teachers that are using it in blended classes, and that continues to grow. We have a lot of teachers that use it just as a website, but I think just keeping up with all of the training of the staff to use it well, to use the tool well, will be our challenge in the next year.
I agree. Capacity, but also economics. Our schools in our area just seem to be getting poorer and poorer. And whereas this is a good bargain for them, still often they can't afford it.
I would echo those two and then just say community perception. Mm-hmm. Because as it grows in popularity for those who still feel that the vision of school is a brick and mortar building where people come, that's, you know, that could be potentially a problem.
I think you have to add on to that equity as far as I've got some kids. We have a very diverse district, but we have kids who are extremely poor, and we have kids who can buy their own laptop and then find whatever we want them to have. And we really see that. And they don't have the access that they need to do. So I have some kids who have to drop out like from summer because their dads.
One word, two word type
thing. Hire Marla.
and Marla's email address. So good stat.
Great stat. We are very fortunate to have our technology coordinator staffed at the building level, and they've helped our teachers troubleshoot it, become comfortable with that. And so that is instrumental, even in that first year, that helped get all of our teachers comfortable in using it and gave them some strategies for the blended classes. And then in that second year when we hired Marla to head up the program, is just been phenomenal.
I think teacher and tech coordinator leadership, good leadership in our districts, that's the key that's helped us grow.
Common and clear vision. Along with the leadership.
Well, I think you'll agree with me. Thank you so much to our students. I just want to thank Blackboard for this wonderful breakfast and the support with the report. The report is going to be downloadable through Blackboard. We have a podcast from last time, and we'll create a podcast from this event, which will be on our website, so we can take a look at that. I hope everyone has a wonderful conference. I hope you'll join us in participating and speak up in the fall. And we'll hang around here for a little bit if you have a few other questions. Thank you so much.
Two things I want to say. First of all, I know you've applied for our team award before.
Okay, yes.
Please apply again because you guys are always a finalist.
Okay. And doesn't that have to be like initiated by